Pawtucket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning and welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Wednesday morning. We are in the Alabama State House. We do this usually on Wednesdays. Probably got like 3 or 4 more weeks left of the session here. So we're going to try to make it. And it just kind of gets, you know, the drill, the round robin of lawmakers that come through here. But just a little warning here. Well, two things, programming note. The internet is very horrible today, so I apologize ahead of time. I'll get that out of the way. Secondly, we don't really have the schedule's sort of fluid right now. I know here in a moment we'll talk to State Representative Susan Dubose, a good friend of mine from Shelby County. But the rest of the way here, we got Craig Lipscomb from Etowah County, architect. I think he and I were at Auburn at the same time at the school there, back when building science and architecture were under the same college. Let's see here. We got Jamie Keel from Russellville, state representative. Matt Simpson, we're familiar with, from Daphne. Big notch in Matt Simpson's resume yesterday, getting that ethics bill through. Carrie Underwood, but he prefers to be called Bubba. Former mayor of Tuscumbia, got to know him really well on his own in Huntsville for the year and a half. We'll hear from him in the 11 o'clock hour. And then maybe David Faulkner as well. So a bunch of lawmakers. Like I said, I think that's the schedule, but it is fluid. So we'll just kind of play it by ear. Anyway, 251-343-0106. You need to be in touch with the program. All you got to do is text me. But here we are. Representative Susan Dubose joins us here in the third floor of the Alabama State House. We also shift around in rooms. Representative, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Thank you for having me this morning.
Hey, thanks for coming by. We do appreciate it. Well, let's start here before we get into your bill. Just tell us a little bit about it's been a productive session. You got a lot accomplished early in the first part of this year. What does it look like from here on, you think?
You know, we had a really, really busy, productive session to begin with. For me, it was super busy, but talking to other lawmakers that have been here a long time, it's probably the busiest session they've ever had. So that's saying a lot.
Right.
But we got some good things done. I mean, highlighted by school choice and by DEI, and we're continuing that. And then the ethics bill, which is one of those things you hate to touch, but it's also necessary for clarity purposes. And I think that's what we were trying to do yesterday. But looking forward, I think we have 12 days left.
Right.
And if you look at 2 days a week, so maybe five more weeks. And I've still got a lot I need to get done. I've still, my stuff has still got to move forward. We were slowed down with gambling.
That first 2 weeks, it was like a holding pattern, like a ground stop, right?
Yeah.
There was nothing going on but gambling.
Right. And then, you know, we had the situation with IVF where we had to jump in and solve that very quickly. So I've got a lot on the horizon. I was glad to get one thing out of the house yesterday. And that companion bill has passed the Senate as well. So I think it'll be able to move rapidly into law. I've probably got three more bills that I'm really focused on getting done this year.
Well, and we still got the budgets.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's always a tedious process. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, Representative, once you get those budgets out of the way, you do get the BIR out of the way, mm-hmm. which will free it up a little bit. But I tell you what gets me or what's kind of, you know, the busy first half of the session. And he mentioned like DEI, school choice, all of these sort of hot button issue bills mm-hmm. got through, and that's before the BIR is out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect? I mean, is it going to be the usual free for all? I wonder going that last week or so.
I don't know. You know, the BIR, it's almost just like it's a procedural motion, like we just moved through it so quickly.
It used to be a lot more
and,
to it, right?
Right. It's just like another one more vote that we do in 5 or 10 seconds. You know, if there's some really critical issues, you could use it to slow down things. We haven't seen that happen really much this year. So, you know, getting the budget passed, that saves us a few seconds, basically, on each bill. But You know, it's just mainly the fact that it's hanging over us. We know we need to do it. Maybe there's some bargaining power by holding it a little bit later, some leverage there. But, you know, it will take some time, and those will be some late nights. Last night was a late night. We went on till about 8 o'clock. We took a break for supper, and then we came back, and I think everybody got in a little bit of a better mood, and we started moving legislation, moving it through, and so we ended by 8. But you don't know what to expect when you come down here. You could be, and that's, you have to be flexible like you are today. That's just part of working in this arena of public service. Things happen, and you've got to be ready to respond when needed.
Well, my observation is, you weren't around last quadrennium, but that Speaker Ledbetter is running a pretty good schedule here. Like, you're starting on time.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe that's why the BIR isn't such an issue, because a lot of those issues are ironed out when
that
it gets to
be.
That point. So I just, it's a completely different leadership style.
I mean, I'm impressed. I think it runs well. We get a lot done in our committee meetings. We get a lot done in advance. We start on time. We gavel in on time. We know what's going to be on the calendar. We move through the calendar almost always all the way through.
Right.
We knew when our breaks were going to be. We knew in spring break and constituent week was going to be in advance. And those gave us those times for me, it gave me some breathing room to work on issues that were coming up. So it's been, I think Speaker Ledbetter is doing a great job managing all of this. And I'm sure he's got more pressure than most of us even realize.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that he gets an earful on a daily basis. So we're joined by State Representative Susan DuBose here on the program. Let's talk about the House Bill 102 dealing with, and I always thought it was kind of a goofy process, like getting a work permit, having to go get permission if you're 14 or 15 years old to go work. And I was telling you, like, I had a job when I was 15 years old where I had to go through. It's not a rigorous process, guys, or at least it wasn't, however, 30 years ago when I did it. But tell us a little bit about your bill, and you got it through, and it looks like it's smooth sailing from here.
Yeah, so what this bill did, it's just 14 and 15-year-olds have always been allowed to work in Alabama. It's just that previously you had to get a permission slip from the administrator at your school to allow you to work. And to me, that seemed a little bit like a barrier to employment. It made it look like you needed to be special in order to work. Like, maybe that wasn't a normal thing that you should consider. So by removing that barrier and just allowing parents to make that decision, I think it'll open up the door for more young people to consider working. And we know today that we don't have the young people in the workforce that we had at one point. Right now in the state of Alabama, we have the lowest workforce participation rate of 16 to 24-year-olds in the whole nation. We also have 100,000 18 to 24-year-olds that are neither working nor going to school. So something has happened with that age group where they just don't understand the value and the dignity of work, or they just don't know how to get started. But allowing 14 and 15-year-olds to work puts them in a very safe environment. They can only work very limited hours. The Alabama Labor Department approved of this bill, worked with us on it. That age group can only work 3 hours a day during the school year and no later than 7 p.m. They can only work a total of 18 hours a week during the school year. And then in the summer, they can work up to 40 hours a week. And then there's very limited occupations where they can work. It has to be a safe environment. They can't be in a hazardous condition. So both federal and state laws protect this age group. And so it gives them an opportunity to learn discipline, to learn social skills, to learn to look adults in the eye and say, "Welcome to Moe's, may I help you?"
Right.
You know, it gets them off those cell phones where they're engaged in TikTok, and we know how dangerous and addicting that kind of stuff is. But kids these days face a different life, and we kind of need to pull them away from that screen time, pulling them away from those gaming that they do, and let them understand the value and dignity of work. We know that the earlier kids start working, the more success they're going to have throughout their life.
Well, it's just that. It's you say it. I think it's absolutely true. The part of, like, your training for life. I know you go through high school and you learn, you know, the academics, but where we, especially in this day and age when everybody's online or texting or whatever, It's just that interaction with human beings that's so important to be successful in life. And, I mean, you know, I mean, I did it when I was young. I may not be the best at it now, but I still think it's important to do that. And it just sets you up with dealing with people later
right?
I mean, that's such
obvious. It's the skills that you learn right off the bat. They seem obvious to those of us that have been doing it for years, but it's not obvious. And it's something that kids need to learn to be comfortable with. And I mean, just the responsibility of having to show up on time. We have employers that are telling us they can't find workers that'll simply show up for work on time. And, heck, they can't find, in some cases, workers that can pass a drug test. But, you know, we have got to start, and even if it's in these small ways like this, educating our young people to participate in the economic engine of our state, which is working.
I mean, this is so cliche, but it's sort of the value of a dollar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you do that now or understand that concept? And like you said, we take these things for granted. But, like, you don't really get it until you
know
have
what?
To do it.
That
you know?
Feeling of your first job when you make your own paycheck and you know you have earned that yourself.
Right.
That's a feeling like no other. And the sooner you experience that, the more you understand it. I mean, having somebody give you $25 is just not the same as earning it yourself. I mean, there's value in that. I mean, you feel self-worth. You gain confidence.
Right.
There's just so many skills that you learn from that. And I just can't think of a better place that a child could be from the hours of 4 to 7 than maybe working in a part-time job. And then go home and do some homework. I mean, boys need to be kept busy. If they got free time, they get in trouble. I know. I had a boy, and they're all like that. They're mischievous.
Enough, yeah.
God made boys curious and mischievous. And, you know, we need to, you know, being an athlete and doing all that practice, that teaches you discipline, too. But not every kid, you know, is set to be an athlete. Working on the band, that same type of skills. And, you know, they can do that during the school year and work during the summer and earn some money and learn the skill of working. But there's a lot of kids that do have the time and whose parents feel that it's right for them, and they need to have the opportunity to be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, so this removes a kind of a legal hurdle.
It's just a barrier to employment. It removes a legal hurdle of having to go to your principal or your superintendent and say, I need to get permission from you. Will you sign this form so that I can go get a job? Now, there's still forms that the employer has to get. He has to get a child labor certificate and post it. He has to get information from the student that says, you know, where do you go to school? You know, and they get all the ID information to make sure exactly what their age is, and so that they don't, you know, have them work too many hours. They have to get a break every 5 hours. So, I mean, there's still things that the employer has to go by in order to make sure that the student is, you know, kept safe.
Yeah, and it's like I was telling you during the break, though, this is not like a rigorous process.
I think,
at least it wasn't when, I mean, like I said, it was a long time ago, but you go down and they just, like a guidance counselor or something, signs off on it, and then
I mean, I don't know how much worth there was in it anyway, to tell you the truth. It was just a formality, and now it's not there anymore. So, you know, we talked about it. There's a little bit of debate on the House floor. We had concerns on both sides of the House about it. I had a lot of support on both sides. We got an amendment passed that just says that if the school sees that there's some performance problems, truancy problems, or grade problems, that they can revoke, you know, their right to work. But, you know, most of these kids that are going to be working, they're balancing things.
A lot of other things.
Yeah.
Representative, we got to leave it there. We're out of time. But thanks again for coming on. We'll do it again soon.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Stay with Susan Dubose. We got to get a break here. Be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.